Hello, and welcome to an all-new episode of the Spotlight Authors Edition. I am one of your hosts, Kente, all the way live from Los Angeles, California, and I'm joined by the beautiful, the talented co-host, Renee. How are you?
I'm good. Are you all the way from Silver Spring, Maryland?
Silver Spring. That's right.
Yes.
Land. All right. We have a great show for you guys today. In just a moment, we're going to be joined by Jen, who's going to talk about our topic today. And then we'll talk about the topic a little bit more into depth in a moment. First of all, how was your day?
Super busy. Working on a few proposals. Always writing, editing. So, yeah. Busy, but good. Productive busy. So, that's always good.
How often would you say you write?
Every day.
Every day. Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's for, if it's for work, then it's, you know, like government stuff, technical stuff, and from our IT staff and human resources, you know, depends on the proposal and the topic training. And then, you know, I write for myself and working on children's books. So every day.
So, you know, I guess we'll go into more depth in a future episode about your writing process when it comes to writing children's books. And, you know, today we're going to talk a lot about you as an editor. But, you know, how long has it been since you started writing?
I was
books and stuff.
Books?
Yeah.
Oh, when I wrote with my twin, my first book was that 2010? I think that was when we published our first children's book. Okay. And that was Have You Ever? So it was just like a fun, playful rhyme for kids. And I asking just silly questions, but, you know, just to get them engaged in reading. But, yeah.
I don't know, like, do you have to get into the mind of a child when writing a children's book?
Sometimes I think depending on the topic, yes. Or at least for your, you know, who your audience is for. I think you either have to either get in that mindset or put yourself around those, you know, that audience or whoever your book is geared for. Talk to them, see how they interact, see what they like. You know, what makes them smile, what doesn't, and then kind of go from there.
Are you around kids a lot?
Oh, yeah, I have. Well, I have six brothers and sisters, so I have a bunch of nieces and nephews, and I'm a twin, and I have little twin nephews, so I get to see how they grow up, so it's interesting. I guess I can use a lot of what I see them do together, and then, you know, separately, which helps, I guess, put me in a mindset of writing the kids' books.
You know, what's interesting is I'm not around children as much. Mm-hmm. So a lot of stuff that a lot of kids are into, I'm not knowing because I'm not really around kids like that. So I miss like a whole bunch of stuff that are children related that, you know, that I can't even relate.
For the children's books, we've used our experiences, you know, as my sister has kids, and then, you know, herself as a mom, but then also as an aunt, we kind of use our experiences to, you know, that it just, that part is natural. We're creative and able to write, you know, different children's books quickly. But we are, you know, also working on a novel. That process is different because we had to, our first couple of drafts, we asked younger people to read it and, you know, get their take. And then they would tell us, we don't talk like that. You can't, that doesn't even sound like kids. So, you know, we had to kind of, you know, use their feedback and things to help us move along in the process. So. Yeah.
Yeah, even, you know, some of the slang is different, you know?
Yes.
So you're like, you know, it's like, we don't say that. That's what you old people say, you know.
Right. And then sometimes we'll, like, I'll use slang that they have used, but it's not slang today. So they'll say, we don't talk like that anymore.
Right, yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of funny and sad at the same time.
I know, because then they remind us we're old. And I guess that's what we used to do when we were little, so, you know.
I used to make fun of the older folk.
Right, and now we're the older folk.
Oh, Lord. Yeah, so.
How was your day?
It was long.
I didn't get to ask you.
It was long. I accidentally left my blinkers on, so my battery ran down in my car. So I was waiting for AAA to come, because I don't even have jumper cable. And my neighbor gave me a jump.
Oh, so, that was nice.
Yeah, it was real nice of him. So I was like really happy that he looked out for me. So,
aww.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah. So, big shout out to my neighbor.
Hey, neighbor.
You know, sad thing though about it is,
what's that?
I don't know my neighbor name.
Did you ask him while he was helping you?
Oh. No, because I felt bad. I felt bad.
But
like,
you're always asking people what their name is and their story. You didn't ask them.
but you know what it is?
That's funny.
You know what it is like, he was so nice. And I didn't want to be like, hey, man, by the way, who are you? Like, you know, like, and he knows my name. He says my name. He's like, hi, Kente.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
You're going to have to get a detective.
I know, man. I'm, you know what? I might just send, like, somebody down there and be like, oh, hey, what's your name, man? You know.
That's funny.
That was not so you know. Oh, man. So okay, yes, we are killing time a little bit because we're waiting for our guest. I thought she was on her way, so I started the show thinking like, oh, she'll just jump in, you know what I mean?
Oh,
so okay. What we'll do is we'll keep talking and then you know,
we'll add her when she joins.
Yeah. So, you know, and then in about 2 minutes, we'll just start the conversation and then we'll just have her join in. Yeah, so I don't know, man. I'm going to do better when it comes to knowing my neighbor's names and whatnot.
I'm surprised. I don't think everybody knows all of their neighbors.
Right.
But I guess in that. Because you're so natural with conversation that, you know, I just expected you worked it in. But that is kind of hard, especially now that you say he says your name all the time.
He's
that's like, a little harder.
He's like, hi, Kente. I'm like, hi.
Yeah, that's tougher. So, yeah, you have to be with somebody. Yeah. Maybe if I'm around him, oh, what's your name? Do you ever find that... when you don't know somebody's name that you think you should, and then you find it out, how do you remember?
How do I remember?
Going forward, yeah.
Oh, I, you know what? I just hope that it comes in conversation. You know what I mean? So that's like my hope is that it'll just come in conversation.
Oh, okay.
You know, or I try to use little techniques to get people to.
Oh, okay. Yeah, sometimes if I get the person's name after I should have known their name or remembered their name, then I'll like make a note in my phone or something. Like, oh, elevator girl, it's Gina.
Dang. All right, so let's get into the topic, and hopefully our guests will be joining us pretty soon. we will. All right. Sorry about that. Sending out a link. Sorry about that. Okay. So, the topic today is, so I've written a book and now I got to get it to the editor. Now, I think one of the coolest things about writing a screenplay, writing a novel, writing what, you know, just doing something creative is finishing, you know, getting to the finish line. That's pretty cool, right? You've written the book, even though if it's just the first draft, you did it, you know? And there's this, there is an event that comes every year, you know about it, mm-hmm. participating in called Nano. And the idea of it is to get you to start your book, you know?
Yeah, NaNoWriMo.
Yeah, NaNo.
I think that's how you pronounce it. Yeah, National November Writing Month.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's some, one of those things that are really cool because so many people have written books just because they did NaNo. And they'll say, hey, I won NaNo, you know, which, you know. So I think that's pretty cool. All right, so as an editor, tell me about like this idea of okay, I finished a book. So what? At what point do you think it should go to the editor? Should it be after the first draft, after you've gone over it 100 times, or like what do you think? What do you suggest?
I'd say it depends on where you are in the process because some people are new; they've never written a book before, but they're like, I finally wrote a book. Say it again. The first one.
First one. Yeah.
This okay. Yeah, I'd say once you have gotten to the end, you know, okay, this is how I want to end the book. It may not be how each chapter may change, you know, as you go. You haven't gone through it, but you're finished. I think you can send it then. It just depends on the editor you find, what their process is. Because like me, I've talked to first-time authors, and they finished. They haven't gone back to read it, but they need somebody else to read it for them. And then there's, you know, depending on what services they want, I can offer to read it first and then just give my opinion. And I can take page by page or chapter by chapter or, you know, read it from cover to cover depending on, you know, what they're looking for. So it just depends. I don't think there's a rule, in my opinion, of when you should send it. But I think once you know that you're ready for it to be published and you want to get to the next stage of improving the writing or, you know, making sure that it is ready for publishing, then find the right editor and send it.
All right. And here's our guest, Jen. How you doing, Jen?
I'm so sorry, guys. You know, technology is always one of those stupid gremlins. Oh, my goodness. Yes. But, hey, I'm really glad to be here. It's good to see you both.
You too.
I'm so glad to see you as well. So,
this is a great topic, by the way.
So we're starting off. We just kind of started the conversation. And we were talking about at what point should, like, a first-time author get the book to an editor? Should it be after the first draft, after you've gone over it 100 times as best you can, or I mean, like, so what is your thoughts on it?
So, okay. I'll give you a little bit of what my experience was. Now remember that this was back in the day, right? So it was a while ago. And things have changed a lot in publishing, because I started out with sending off query letters and asking, you know, first I was asking different agents if they wanted to pick me up. And my agent is actually the one who helped me find an editor. But later on down the road, I actually started working with an editor who helped me to kind of understand the entire process. Now, I'll say that, you know, when I was younger, and this is when I was writing romance novels, my experience was you write the novel and then you do the best you can to, you know, give it whatever updates you can, make sure that it's in good grammatical format, you know, that it's what you think you want to send out there. And then it in terms of what my experience was, an editor was assigned to me, and the editor just basically, like, you know, picked everything apart. And I have to say that in terms of where things are from middle, and then there's, you know, sort of like your beginning part and then your end part, I think your editor is more, should actually be more your beginning and not your middle and end, mm-hmm. because it saves so much time. I can't tell you how many hours I think I would have saved for myself and for the entire publishing process if we had put the editor on board earlier, mm-hmm. because there were just so many things that I didn't see as the author, you know. And I think I have to be really honest here, as the content creator, sometimes you feel a bit of hubris about your material, and allowing someone to kind of pick it apart and, you know, not just give you helpful, meaningful grammatical updates, but also give you the kind of content critique that really is helpful. That's hard. It can be really hard. So the faster you get that sort of on board, the less attached you're going to be to the changes later. Does that make sense?
Makes perfect sense.
Oh yeah, I agree with that, because I think, you know, that's your baby. You spent so much time writing, and you may have gone back and edited it yourself and said, oh, I want to change this. So you're so close to it, and now you're giving it to somebody to say, take this out, change this. Why did you do this? Like, ask you tons of questions, and you're like, oh my gosh, this sucks.
I think as a content creator, if you can remove yourself from the process mm-hmm. enough that you are looking at this as a full-scale process. So in a similar way, you know, if you were going to send a movie out, your editing process for a movie is oftentimes really different than everything mm-hmm. that you've shot up to that moment.
Right.
And you have to you have to trust the process. You know, you have to let, I will say this too, which I do think is important. Your relationship with your editor is so incredibly personally
yes.
important, because if you trust your editor, you really you've made that connection. You've really gotten yourself way ahead of the game. I wish I had known that very early. I really do.
Yeah, that does make a difference. I've had, you know, authors ask me to edit their work, and then just in different conversation without even editing, just asking questions, I'm like, this is probably not the right relationship, because I know how I am, and just going off of the feedback or what they say, sometimes you get that vibe, I guess, that they may not handle my critique well, and I'm just, you know, trying to help them put out a great product. So yeah, I think the relationship is important.
And it's easy as an author to feel mm-hmm. defensive about your material.
Yes.
And I think that there's a place for that, but you also have to temper that defensiveness with this sense of, okay, right, I feel this way about my work, but if the editing process is going to be successful, I have to step back from that defensive posture and let the entire process work. Because honestly, as the artist, it's not always, you don't always understand the what's a good word for this, you don't always understand the technicalities that need to go into mm-hmm. the actual publishing process, and that was something that was like a big learning curve for me. So yeah,
you know, as we're talking, it just made me think, like, maybe we should define what an editor is. I know it may sound obvious, but I don't know that. I think there's probably misconceptions with some people what exactly an editor is when it comes to writing books. So, Renee, would you mind in your mind, what is an editor, and what is something an editor is not that you think that people think it is?
That's a good question. Other than saying the someone who edits, I mean, I think they can be that reader, the, mm-hmm. you know, who you're writing to, because they can say, from my perspective, after reading this, because you, even though you're correcting grammar, punctuation, flow of the sentences, do you introduce this character but didn't talk about them till three chapters later, whatever it is, they're, although they're doing that technical stuff that like Jen was mentioning, they're still reading your work. So they're, you know, they're giving you the other view of, this is what the book sound like to me. This is, you know, how
the sounding board. Well,
yeah, you could, I could say, I would say sounding board. It's like you're, you, like what Jen was saying with the relationship, kind of consider this is your best friend reading your work, and you know, you want to see right. did their eyes light up, or you know, did they, did the emotion you were trying to convey come out? You know, did they get that? Or you also get other perspectives, like I, this is what I got from this character, and it may be something that you never even thought of, just because you're so focused on writing the work, you never, some things you don't think about, and then it makes you learn about yourself as a writer, and also maybe something about the characters.
That's interesting. You know, one thing about being an editor, I would wonder if, like, can you be an editor if you don't like the material?
Yes.
Okay.
I can.
and do a good, a solid job.
Yeah. I mean, if you take your work seriously as an editor, if you're serious about editing and that's what you do, if you take it as I'm a professional, I want to do the best job because that's your client. You're trying to get more. You don't want that to be the only person. Yeah, I've edited plenty of books and stories that either I thought it was just over the top raunchy and it just wasn't for me as a reader, but I was hired to edit. So I just took my personal self out of it and just did the job. And I still do the same process, but I'm just not emotional about it. So I, you know, I can still do a good job, you whether know, I like it or not.
I'm really offended that you brought up that by my book that was over the top raunchy.
Oh well, I didn't want to say either. I was trying not to say your work. But I mean, there's times that some books, you know, I thought it was written well, but I, you know, it's just either not my genre, so I couldn't get into it. But it doesn't mean that it wasn't a good book. So yeah, I think you can edit stuff you don't necessarily like.
You know, that actually brings up another good point, which is sometimes an editor can give you the sort of understanding that if you are writing to a specific genre or writing a genre book, that you might not be hitting the right marks, that, you know, you haven't. I run into this sometimes when people will write what they think is fantasy. And it's actually not fantasy. It's actually something else. And it doesn't actually meet all the metrics. Or it's a really good sci-fi piece, but it's not necessarily, let's say, like a techno thriller or something like that. There's all of those little pieces. And, you know, again, this is back in the day, so forgive me for, you know, waxing on poetic. But I had this short contract with this little company called Harlequin, right? Harlequin Romance.
Oh, yeah, Harlequin.
Oh, yeah.
And so, and you know, you write under all these different pseudonyms, and you're, there were plenty of times when they would come to me and say, hey, this needs this, can you write it? And then the editor, I would put in that material and then the editor would go, yes, okay, this is exactly what we're looking for. Or this is terrible and please, you know, fix it because this doesn't work. But there are very specific metrics that Harlequin had for when to introduce, I guess without saying that it was like formulaic fiction, it was formulaic fiction. And only the editor is really the person that could tell you how to define what those metrics were. So that job is incredibly important for both of those reasons, both to make sure that you're hitting the genre metrics, but also to make sure that you are also meeting the formula that needs to be there if it is formula in nature. Do you know what I mean?
Yes. Oh, no. Yes. That's very well said, too. One thing that I find that is hard sometimes when you're, because I've done something that's kind of like editing script doctoring, right? Mm-hmm. And one thing that it was hard for me at first, and I really want to get this idea from you as an editor, Renee, and then you as a person who, Jen, who has their work edited, but we'll start off with Renee, is how do you help them maybe fix their book, mm-hmm. you know, or make it the best that it can be, but also keep their voice? Because you have maybe have ideas of how books should be written or whatnot, right? But it may not be in their voice. So how do you maintain keeping their voice, but then getting it right?
Well, me personally, I don't like communicating by email or text. So I always either meet in person or Zoom with, you know, whatever, so that I can see the person and talk to them. But I like to see people's reactions also to what I'm saying, because it could be when I'm communicating, they're just not understanding what I'm saying, or it didn't come across how I wanted it to be. But I think just asking a lot of questions, because sometimes, and I always tell them, no matter what, this is still your work. Don't change it. Don't change this page because I suggested you to change it. Maybe the person, the character speaks in slang for a reason. So don't change the slang because I said that sentence doesn't make sense. You still want to stick to your story and, you know, what was your purpose for the story? What is your goal? I think it just depends. I try my best to ask as many questions as I can, even while I'm editing. Because there's some things I'm reading that maybe I'm not understanding, you know, what they're saying, or I'm not getting what they're trying to convey. So I, you know, just try to ask as many questions as possible.
Now, what about you, Jen, from an author's point of view? How do you don't let the editor take your voice away, but also help you get to where you need to get to?
So this is where I think having that relationship with your editor is so incredibly important, because if you trust the editor's opinion, then, and I will say, my editor, I won't give out a last name, but her first name was Mary, so I'll just call her Mary. She,
wait, and is she was Sue?
No. although I think she would find that extremely funny. She was the kind of person who would say, okay, my opinion is this. And she would make opinion very well known. But she would also say, okay, but this is an actual hardline fact, right? Your hardline fact is you're not introducing enough action sequences for any of this to make sense. Before we get to this big action sequence here, you have to back this up. Like, that was just actual, this needs to change. But her opinion might be, I don't like this character, and I think you could probably just X him out and still have a workable novel, and everything's going to be fine. And so, to me, first of all, I don't think any author on the planet is going to have a difficult time not trying to hold on to their own material. They're going to try to fight it tooth and nail no matter what, because that's just, you know, like Renee said, it's your baby, right? Yeah. You don't stop cutting off my baby's fingers and toes.
No, it's not a baby.
But at the end of the day, you know, if you sort of like relook at it to say, okay, no, we're not actually cutting the baby up. We're just raising the baby together. Then you kind of reframe the idea about how you're going to do it. And there's going to be some arguments. There's going to be some back and forth. But ultimately, at the end of the day, you know, if you trust that your editor is trying to make your product the best that it can be for publication, that's what matters. So, you know, once again, I think as from the author's perspective, you'll always have moments when you're going to be at odds a little bit with your editor. But if you can keep it, you know, so that you're just like, okay, well, I really like this part. This is the only thing that I think sort of backs this up, and you go back and forth, you might come to a conclusion together that, yeah, this actually is the way to go. But it really comes down to that relationship. I really believe that.
Mm-hmm.
Just as a side note, I've seen Renee edit books. And she has, first of all, she has an iPhone 6. Do you have your iPhone 6?
Oh, geez. Yes. Yes, world. I have an iPhone 6. All the phones do the same thing. You can put apps on it. You can make phone calls. You can go online. Yes.
But she has an iPhone 6. It's not good. And I've seen her edit, professionally edit books on an iPhone 6. I'm like, how are you doing this?
Like, I'm a pro. I'm a professional. I can do this.
It's really impressive.
Thank you. I do that all the time, but yeah. But if it's something in my mind and I want, I want to capture it, or I'm on the go. I don't want the author waiting because of my schedule. So I, always try to make sure I follow up with the author on a strict schedule, so they're not waiting on me.
That to me says that Renee is a 100% serious professional.
Thank you, Ted.
And once again, not to like date myself to the point where I'm going to feel ancient and old, but to be honest, the way that the relationship with myself and my longest standing editor ran was, she would send me little bits of information, and she would say, okay, now call me, now talk to me and tell me what you think about this. And very seldom did we ever sort of like get on the phone and not have a ton more to discuss. It was always a, hey, this is what this means. And then that would snowball into. So the better that communication style is, and the more tailored it is to you, like, I love talking,
right?
As if you can't tell. And so that matters to me, right? Because some editors are like, listen, no, you can contact me via email and then that's it. And then that's going to cause a problem for me, because I need to hear your inflection. I need to know what it is that you're saying and how you're saying it, because that's how I work best.
Now, I'm going to bring up something, and you don't have to give specifics for me. But in Hollywood, maybe Jen will know this term. There's a term that I don't think they use it anymore, but it's a term in Hollywood called Alan Smithy. And Alan Smithy is basically when a guy directed a movie, and let's say the studio effed it up and it didn't come out the way that the director liked it, he wouldn't want his name on it. So they would use Alan Smithy. That means kind of like it would say directed by Alan Smithy, and that means like the director.
It wasn't my fault.
Right. Like, I don't want my name on it.
They disowned that. That wasn't mine. I've actually seen some Ridley Scott movies, which I kind of think maybe should have gone
So my question to you, have you ever wanted to Alan Smithy
book? Yeah. I've had conversations before it got to the end of I'm done with my job, and now you can publish it. Congrats. I've had it where I've worked into the conversation. You don't have to put me on this. Thank you. Like, I don't need to be on the thank you acknowledgement page. Thank you to the editor. You're the best. No. This is your baby. This is your thing. I want you to get all the credit. I've had that conversation before, and I don't think they may be watching now, but I don't think they got what I was doing. But yeah, I've done that several times. Because there was one, we got in every conversation, I'm just giving my feedback. This is what I read. You put this character in here, but you don't tell me why they're there. You don't say anything. They surprise, I'm here, and they just start speaking. It doesn't like flow. Now you've messed up the flow, or some things, you don't need this part. Like, you're over telling me stuff that any reader would have caught. So then there would be always a it turned into arguments, and I'm like, okay, wait a minute, this is not going how, you know, we should go. Let's take a break. I'll talk to you tomorrow. And then everything that every criticism I'd say is just learning, you know, to get you better. They would say, nope, you're wrong. That's not right. That's not the rules, blah, blah, blah. Oh, I'm like, okay, if anything, I know grammar. I know punctuation. That part I know. So arguing with me on that is, you know, that's not going to work. But it was like any feedback I gave was just like, nope, nope, nope. And I said, you know, this is a, you know, congrats. I didn't give any positive feedback on this is great work. But congrats, you did, you know, you wrote
a book. You did a thing.
Go forward and process.
You know, oh, just to let you guys know, be careful when you text Renee, because she may give it back to you with red marks all over it.
Oh.
So if you
tried not to.
If you had to come up with your own Alan Smithy name to put as editor instead of Renee,
would you,
I'm gonna ask Jen the same question. If you had to come up with like a name, like an Alan Smithy type name,
Simone Barksdale.
Simone Barksdale. Huh? I like that. Actually, that's a cool name.
I know.
What about you, Jen? What would your name be?
Oh. Goodness, I don't know. It's got to be some kind of like play on words or something. No, it's got to be like Drew Page or something.
Wait, how do you say I hate this crap backwards?
Right.
Careful, you might summon that demon. Don't do that. Yeah. You know, just as a quick personal anecdote, I had written this one novel which I thought was like, you know, okay, I was 19 years old, so, you know.
Last year.
I really thought I was, like, hot stuff, right? I was not, but I thought I was. And so I had this novel written, which was about 1,000 pages long. Now, 1,000 pages to write is like, look, that's blood, sweat, and tears. I really, like, put a ton of thought into this. I sent it off to, this is the first time that I did it, I sent it off to Mary first and said, what do you think? Isn't this going to be great? And she sent me back two lines and she said, rewrite.
Mm.
And that was it. That was nothing else. That was it. And, you know, I was like, first of all, I was personally offended for days. I thought, okay, fine. I like went through all of the processes of grief. Like, you know, clearly she doesn't know what she's talking about. And then, well, obviously, you know, there's got to be a mistake. And then there was like the bargaining aspect, you know, can't we just talk about this a little? And eventually I did understand what she was saying. And I was like, oh yeah, okay. Okay. And so the whole work ended up being 400 pages, which was 600 pages of stuff that was edited out. And it actually, I think, turned out pretty good. So in the end, I feel like, you know, she was right, I was wrong. But getting to she was right and I was wrong was not easy. That was really hard. That was like some months out of my life that I was like, okay, fine. I guess I'm just not a good writer. I'm just going to give up and, you know, whatever. So, yeah. It's tough. It is.
And I can say tough. Being an author and an editor, I hate when people read my stuff before it's published, because some that I know will edit it. And they give me like the feedback I give, and I, as an author, I can't take it.
Yeah,
and I'm like, just read it. I didn't ask for all that. Just read the story. I'm not asking you for it. Just read it. And they're like, no, this is spelled wrong. I know. I'm not editing yet. I just want you to read. So yeah,
this actually brings up a really good point, Renee, because there is a difference, and especially now because it's so prevalent on the internet, between a beta reader and an editor. Right?
Oh yeah, yeah,
yeah.
That's true. Yeah,
you know,
I should start the conversation. I just want you to beta read my project.
There you go.
No, I'm an alpha.
Okay, so pretend this is fan fiction, and just read it as if it's fan fiction,
right.
And then we can move on from there.
You know, something I don't like, and one of my first authors I read. And well, he was the first author I read as a young person, but I still love his work. Stephen King, he does something that, although I like his work, I love his work, it's so annoying. He over, like, explains stuff. So it'll be like, Kevin went to the market. He went through the double doors. He said hi to Cliff. He went down and got a basket. He took the basket down aisles 14. I'm like, God,
dang, like, he's in the store. I get it.
I hate that. That is, oh my God. But some
okay.
people, they do it way too much.
What is Stephen King?
Okay, but to his defense, okay, if you were to take out all that stuff, Kinte, from Stephen King's work, you would never have the story The Mist.
The same, yeah.
So, if
that
you didn't have,
true.
You know,
that is
like,
true.
No, I'm just joking, of course. But I agree. Like, I think that there's a whole bunch of Stephen King novels which are like, you know, 700 pages long, which could have easily been told in 350 pages.
Yeah, like you'd be sitting there, like you'll be all into the book, and then he'll get into the weeds of, he'll be like Michael came home, and then he got in his.
He stood on his left foot.
Yeah,
and lifted his arm.
Then he'll go into how he got his love seat, and how it was this Iranian woman gave it to him in 1952, and it has nothing to do with the plot. And you're like, Steve.
Yeah. Well, that's hard. Yeah, because they do say show, don't tell.
Right.
So then you're like, well, when am I showing too much? You know? Yeah. So that is the hard part, I think.
You know who else does that? Pretty. Mm-hmm. Dramatically is George R.R. Martin. You know, you don't, and you're afraid to like not read it because, well, maybe it's going to be important in, you know, 180 pages later, but chances are, no, it's actually not ever going to be important. You're just reading somebody's pedigree or, you know, a litany of who their past ancestors were. Yeah.
Now I'm saying this to get to a certain point. And one thing as a screenwriting doctor, I like to do is when I find like there's multiple characters that kind of serve the same function, I'm really big into trying to get them combined into one or two characters. And a lot of times people, they don't realize, you know, during their authorship that you really don't need like these eight people, because one is in the screenplay, you got to cast all these people.
Right, all eight, yeah. Right. That can be expensive.
So, but when it comes to writing, I think a lot of times authors feel like because I have all this real estate in this book, I can have 19 characters that kind of feel like they could be one character. So we'll start with you, Jen. One is, have you ever, during the course of your writing, been told that by an editor, or have you ever felt like that? You know, the whole idea of shrinking, you know, multiple characters down into one.
Oh, for sure. And again, this sort of goes back to, at least from the beginning, understanding how to write formulaic fiction, which is, you know, don't get me wrong, I loved it. It was an amazing experience, and it really helped me to understand how to become more creative as an author. There's a lot of freedom inside of structure. And it was really amazing. But yes, that came up often. Or I would be told, you have too many locations. Mm-hmm. And you've got to condense the locations because readers won't understand why you're skipping back and forth between this place and this place. Let's try to make a median place where all these characters can come kind of coalesce, and you'll have a better experience from the reader's perspective.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I mean, because, you know, I think one issue is the author knows everything because it's their work, but they don't realize that it's not necessarily translating to the reader.
Yeah.
So,
You know, if I can interject something, I think part of what you're saying is really well demonstrated by the idea that we've had in recent decades of the director's cut, right? Mm-hmm. In editing, what you actually shoot or what you're actually envisioning is going to happen may never make it into the final cut.
Right.
And that editing process becomes really super important. And sometimes it can even change the entire flavor of the movie.
Right.
You know, so... Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, is that something that you come across, Renee?
Oh, Yeah.
Didn't sing?
Yeah, all the time. There's been like whole chapters cut just because either the author has, it's already been written. So it's like, you sound like you're just repeating yourself because you wanted to get to a certain number of pages or, you know what it is. So now you feel like, well, I said it before, but I need to say it again. So a lot of times I think there's parts that you're not, the story's not going anywhere. You're just kind of going in the circles. I read this before. And I don't know, I've found just in reading when I'd buy a book and I'm like, I want to read this book. Sometimes I'm like, they've said this already. So then I feel like, have I read this page more than once? Or am I, you know, have they just written the same thing? Please. You know, there's been times that I've sent emails to just authors just to let them know, you know, just because that's, I hope somebody would do that for me, you know, no matter what. So yeah, sometimes I think it's, you know, yeah, you cut people, like Jen said, places. That's just part of the process.
Yeah.
There's a huge difference between, and I feel like this is just sort of hindsight, but there's a huge difference between creativity and technicality. And sometimes the creators don't see the technicalities in things, and that's okay, but you need to have somebody to temper the technicalities in your creativity. Otherwise, you just have kind of a hot mess. Right. And that's not what readers want. Readers need organized function because our brains don't work inside of the hot mess sphere. I mean, it's, I'm not saying that like you can't understand if somebody throws something together and you're like, oh yeah, you know, this is great. AO3, the archive of our own with the fan fiction, that it's very similar, right? Just all thrown together sometimes. But if you're talking about, I'm ready for prime time and I want to have a published book, this is an extremely important part of the entire process. And so you have to let, either you have to let the editor become your technical voice, or you have to step up to the plate and realize that you have to have this co sort of parenting agreement with your content that you're going to be able to say, yes, some of these things aren't going to make any sense, and I need to listen to who my technical contact is in order to get it straight.
Now, there's another conversation I want to have that I feel like I want to have this in a larger conversation, and I want to have you back on, Jen, to talk about it. But I think like it'll fit with this is content, right? Now, if you're doing a literatica type thing, it makes sense why it would be graphic and in nature and stuff. Or if you know, certain stories, I feel like they should be graphic.
You have to,
But sometimes when I read stuff and it's overly graphic and it doesn't seem like there's a real purpose or it's necessary, it, especially as I've gotten older, maybe when I was younger, it wasn't, but as I gotten older, it takes me out of stuff. And I just kind of want to talk to you guys about how you guys feel about that from a writing standpoint of being, you know, a lot of graphic content when I don't feel like, me personally, I don't feel like it fits, but I don't know if you guys ever experienced that. You kind of spoke to that a little bit, Renee.
Jen did. Well, I think, and Jen spoke to it also. Sometimes it seems like authors, when Jen was speaking about like a genre,
right?
Sometimes it seems like they're forcing it. And, well, I wrote a fantasy. This has to be fantasy. So I have to include XYZ. But then it's just like, it doesn't flow anymore. Like this, I'm still, as read me, even though I'm editing it, I'm still reading your work. Like this sounds like you put in 15 curse words because you feel that you have to, but you don't need it. Like sometimes I think it just takes away from the story. I edited a comedy series and I think the guy probably published 15 books and, you know, he would send me each one and some of them, it was, you know, it was like raunchy.
Right.
But some of the jokes didn't need it. I'm like, you didn't need all that. It just sounded like you're trying to stick to this just because, for whatever reason. So I'm like, it's just, so then it was, and a lot of it, I'm like, I don't find it funny anymore. because it seemed like just too forced.
It's like, and I'm gonna get to Jen's point, but going back to Stephen King, mm-hmm. there's a great book called Mr. Mercedes, and it's a really terrific book, but there's one issue about it is the character is overly racist, like to the point where he's using the N-word like so much. And it's like, and honestly, it was to the point where you're like, oh, we get it. He doesn't like this character. But, and it's like, and I was so glad when they made the TV show, they actually took all of that out. It's not in the TV show at all. And I know he's done that in a couple of books where that takes me out of it. And also, if you ever read the book Forrest Gump, Forrest Gump is dropping the N-word all through that book. You know, like a lot of people don't know. Like Forrest Gump in the book is not Forrest
Gump. It's not Forrest Gump that we know.
No.
He's not Life is Like a Box of Chocolates.
No, he's a douchebag.
A coconut bar.
Yeah, he was like a douchebag in the book, you know. Wow. And I think the author is kind of a douchebag himself, but they really cleaned that up and made it, you know, they polished that turd. Hmm. But that kind of stuff takes me out of it because it's like, okay, I get you want to establish that this person is a certain way, but it's like, dang, I mean, you know, we have more than an orgy of evidence that this person
right.
is a way. We get it. You don't have to keep beating that hammer like over and over. Now it's like, it's just, you know, it's like porn, you know, you know, I don't know. I don't like it. But I don't know. What about you, Jen? What do you think about this content?
So once again, I think, you know, having this relationship with an editor can really make a big difference, because if your editor says there's a lot of superfluous material in here that where you're saying basically or conveying the same thoughts with these characters again and again and again, do you need that? But and then you say, absolutely, no, I have to have this. Sometimes I think that can sort of be stylistically, yes, it's going to turn some people off. But also I think that there's the stylistic part that is questionable is maybe this is lack of skill. Like, you know, maybe the author just isn't able to convey what they need to convey without using epithets and, you know, things that sort of can bring that home because they just don't have the skill level. And I'm not saying that Stephen King doesn't have that skill level. I'm saying that maybe he just doesn't have sort of a wider open door with some of his characters that have certain traits to be able to express them. Does that make sense?
No,
it does. Yeah.
Yeah. It's, you know, it's interesting because people, you know, it's not about, to me, censorship or anything. It's about, like, what are you trying to accomplish with the stuff you're doing? Like in music, you know, especially when I was younger, I didn't really care as much. As you get older, it's like, I don't want to hear that. Like, I don't want to hear, you know.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't know. I get it with comedy to a certain degree and stuff like that. I'm not saying no situation, but I'm just saying like certain things. I'm like, okay, did we really need that? Do we need to hear that? You know, so I don't know. I mean, but you know, I'm just a guy that's trying to figure things out. You know what I mean?
So, we all are.
Yeah. So I want to thank you so much, Jen, for coming on the show. And I think our next conversation that we're going to have with you will be about, I really want to delve into like responsibility when it comes to content.
That's a good, good topic.
And I want to, so the next time we do a show, I want to talk about responsibility. I mean, the next one of these topic shows, I want to deal with the author's responsibility when it comes to putting their stuff out in the world. So Jen, how can we get you on social media and all that good stuff?
You can find me over at moviesandmeals.com. You can also find me every week over at the Wodcast, well, at Wodco Media. My producer and I do a show called 10 to 1, which is always so fun, where we count down movies on a specific topic or theme.
All right. And anything, Renee, that you want to tell the people before we say goodnight?
As always, I say the only limit in writing is punctuation. So write that story. I'm just working on, finishing up children's book number 3 with my twin. Hey, twin.
That's so sweet.
But yeah.
All right. You guys.
How about you?
Oh.
Anything from you?
No, just doing more podcasts and, working on my book as well. So. But and hopefully I won't be that author that you guys were talking about. So when I get it to you, my editor. So you guys have a great rest of your week. Enjoy the weekend. God bless.
Thanks, Jen.
Thank you guys.
We'll see you next time.
See you next time.